There were 15 Japanese players in MLB training camps to start the spring, but only 10 will be on opening day rosters. You'll find out who on this edition of the Japan Baseball Report.
You're listening to the Japan Baseball Report, your weekly English language podcast that provides news and notes related to Japanese baseball.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Japan Baseball Report, and we are going to keep you up to date with all of the happenings as Major League Baseball season begins on Thursday in North America, as it'll be the first games of the regular season. Of course, the Cubs and the Dodgers got going last week in Japan in the Tokyo series, but now it gets going for real in North America starting on Thursday. Well, we first bring you some news and notes of some of the players that have been demoted that will not be on the MLB roster. And we'll start with Shinsuke Ogasawara. The former Chunichi Dragon was demoted by the Nationals after he was beaten out for the final roster spot by Mitchell Parker. They felt it was a battle between Ogasawara, Parker, and DJ Hers. Hers ended up on the injured list. It was felt by some it would come down to the final start of the spring to determine who would be promoted and who would have been left off the roster, and it couldn't have gone worse for Ogasawara. On March 20th, Ogasawara worked 3 2/3 innings against the New York Mets and surrendered 8 hits, as well as 8 runs, which were all earned, walking 3 and striking out 4. So for Ogasawara, his first taste of baseball in North America, he is going to start in AAA with the Rochester Red Wings, where he is going to look to regain his form. The value of Ogasawara and the signing, I think it's still a good signing, and I still think that Ogasawara, once he gets sorted out, will be fine, and it'll be a productive piece. I think of the last couple of years that the Washington Nationals have had Patrick Corbin. Certainly Ogasawara can't be any worse than that. But that being said, it's not the Nationals of the last couple of years. They have some young players that are competing and fighting for roster spots. As Mackenzie Gore, the former Padre prospect, it looks like he is going to be leading the way of that pitching staff. But Ogasawara is going to have to start the year in AAA and earn his way back into the club. Certainly anything can happen with injuries across the board. Our second up is Koyo Oyagi. And Oyagi, the Phillies made the decision to demote Oyagi to the Lee Valley Iron Pigs of the AAA. And that was an easy one, as Oyagi did not have a great spring. The former Hanshin Tiger last appeared in a spring training game with the Phillies on March 13th. He worked in 4 games this spring and certainly wasn't impressive in any of his outings. Over the last couple of years, the Phillies looked to secure a player from the NPB, or they had tried to make moves on NPB-type players. And in some ways, it was to bridge a gap between its domestic roster and international talent. But despite the efforts to lure Japanese stars, the signing of Oyagi, his poor spring performance may cause the organization to reflect on their international recruiting and scouting strategy and how they evaluate players coming in from other leagues. For the record, Oyagi ended the spring with 3 innings pitched in 4 games, posting an ERA of 12. Went on to walk 6 and struck out 6 while allowing the 3 hits, but the alarming numbers were his lack of strikes. He threw 96 pitches in the spring and only 44 for strikes. So he's going to have to go down to AAA and sort himself out. And to think that he was a big part of the Hanshin Tigers a couple of years ago and even considered to be one of the best pitchers or having one of the better years for the Tigers that season. Well, that is the news and notes on Oyagi. We'll move over to the Seattle Mariners. Shintaro Fujinami has been sent to the minors, and it's not unexpected. Fujinami was the other Japanese player to be sent to the minors this spring. His spring started rocky, but in fairness to Fujinami, he started to trend in the right direction. Fujinami got an extended look in Mariners camp as he worked in 8 ball games, working 7 2/3 innings. He pitched allowing 5 runs, and all of which were earned. The concern with Fujinami is that he hit 3 batters and walked 9 while striking out 5 batters. So 12 free passes in, I guess we'll call them free passes, 9 with walks and 3 hit batters, and 7 2/3 innings. That's not going to get you, that's not going to get you noticed. It's not going to get you a job at the back end of the bullpen. But Fujinami's inability to throw strikes was an issue. 72 strikes and 151 pitches. So he's living below the 50% line. And on March 22nd, he was reassigned to the minor league camp with the Mariners. So one thing's for certain, though, you have to keep in mind with Fujinami, he is 6'6". And when a team sees someone that can throw 100-plus miles an hour, it's hard to give up on that type of talent if they believe that if they can make a few tweaks with him, they can get the most out of his potential. I think of a number of years ago when I heard Rick Peterson talk, the former pitching coach with the with a number of teams. He was with Oakland. He was also with the Mets, as well as the Orioles. And one of the things that he talked about was, as a pitching coach, when you're looking at other teams' pitchers, yeah, certainly ones that are struggling, you're trying to figure if there's something that you can do to help that pitcher get over the hump. Maybe that's what the Mariners will hope to do with Fujinami. As we said, you can't just lock down any main street in the USA and find someone throwing 100 miles an hour. That is just not in the cards in most cases. Well, those are the three players that are going to start down in the minor leagues at some variety, at some level. We'll come back and take a look at the players who are going to break camp with their big league clubs right after this. You are listening to the Japan Baseball Report, brought to you by Last Drafts Baseball. If you are into the NPB, be sure to join us for our listening parties and live English commentary on the Last Drafts Baseball YouTube channel beginning March 28th, 2025. If you're just here for the podcast, it can be found on YouTube and wherever you download your podcasts. Welcome back, everybody. Our next up is Kenta Maeda of the Detroit Tigers. He was in a battle for the fourth and fifth roster spots in Detroit, or starting rotation spots in Detroit. The Tigers will open up the season with Tariq Skubal, Jack Flaherty, and Reese Olson as their big three, but it was supposed to be Alex Cobb in a battle for the fifth spot between Maeda, Jackson Job, and Casey Mize. Casey Mize was the one-time first overall pick in the MLB draft. So those three particular players were battling for the spot, but then Alex Cobb, who had off-season hip surgery, went down, and it became two open spots at the back end. And of the two players competing, Mize and Jackson Job were able to knock out Maeda from that position. It'll be one or the other that will get the fourth and fifth start. Not sure how the Tigers are going to slot them together. Maeda will begin the year in the bullpen for Detroit, and an area where he really excelled in the 2024 season. The Tigers were using a opener, and then they would bring Maeda in long relief or in that secondary role, and he really seemed to take off in that particular, at least that particular role for Detroit. Maeda was 0-2 in 14 and two-thirds innings of work while posting a 4.91 ERA in the spring. The eye-popping number that was Maeda struck out 23 batters in those 14.2 innings, and he only walked one. So his strikeout-to-walk ratio is pretty darn good. So keep an eye on Maeda. The Tigers thought about or babied Jackson Job through his minor league career, and Casey Mize is a Tommy John survivor. So even though he has struggled with his health since that great 2019 season that Mize had between high A and double A, he is still a bit of an unknown quantity at the big league level. So those players there will get their opportunity, and Maeda will have to bide his chance and wait in the wings for the potential future opportunity. Well, that is Kenta Maeda, and we'll move over to Tomoyuki Sugano of the Baltimore Orioles. Sugano got off to a great start this spring. He was 10 innings of work without allowing an earned run, but his final act was against the New York Yankees, and that was one for him to forget. Sugano went 4 2/3 innings, allowing 6 hits and 5 runs, all of which were earned. It fluffed up his spring ERA to 3.00. In his longest outing of the spring, at least in terms of pitches, Sugano threw 85 pitches, and 52 of them were for strikes. So what would we expect? I don't think this is going to shake Sugano. I still think that Sugano is going to be a seasoned, grizzled veteran as he is. This won't faze him at all. He reminds me in some ways of former Seattle Mariner Hisashi Iwakuma, who came to the MLB later in his career. And if you're an Orioles fan, you should be excited for the team and this particular player. I really think that the loss of Corbin Burnes is the impact for the Orioles, but I think Tomoyuki Sugano, with the additions of some of the other arms in Baltimore are going to stabilize that staff. And with the young core in the offense, I think they're going to be just fine. So it's not been determined at the time of this podcast when he will get his next start. He's not in the first three, but we'll keep an eye on that for you. And we'll be reporting on the play of the Japanese players once per week on the podcast. Our next up is Yusei Kikuchi. And Yusei Kikuchi is going to get the nod for the Los Angeles Angels on opening day. He is the, if you don't want to include the Tokyo series, he is the only opening day pitcher that it'll be Japanese. His spring kept getting better as he went along. In his three starts, he saved his best for last against the Colorado Rockies. Versus the Rocks, Kikuchi worked five innings, allowed only four hits. And one run, which was earned, he'd walked two and struck out five. After the trade from the Blue Jays to the Astros last year, one of the noticeable things was Kikuchi was able to ramp up his production. One of the reasons for that was his use of his four-seam fastball with the Stros. There was talk in Toronto that he wasn't using as much. He was using some of his secondary pitches a little bit too much and maybe relying on that. It'll be interesting to see how he performs with his new club and if the emphasis that the Astros put on his fastball, if he keeps that with them in his move to Los Angeles. And also curious to see how the Angels are going to perform this year. They have tweaked their roster, revamped their roster, and Yusei Kikuchi is going to be an integral part of their pitching staff moving forward here in the start of the season. We're going to take another time out. We'll be back in just a couple moments. We appreciate you guys for jumping in with us. This is the Japan Baseball Report brought to you by Last Raps Baseball. We'll be back in a couple moments right after this. Are you into slow motion video of hitting and pitching mechanics? Last Raps Baseball's YouTube channel has been updating our database. During the 2025 season, we'll be uploading more video with our thoughts and analysis. If you're just here for the podcast, you're listening to the Japan Baseball Report found on the Last Raps Baseball YouTube channel and wherever you download your podcasts. Welcome back, everybody. Our next up is Kodai Senga of the New York Mets. Senga's been used with kid gloves this spring as he's made three starts and has had some decent results. He will get the nod for the Mets on April the 1st in Miami. It would be the Mets' fifth game of the year after the team opens up a three-game set in Houston. The decision to hold Senga back is a strong sign that New York will continue to monitor his workload this season. Senga was quoted as saying through his interpreter that he's felt good this spring and hasn't had trouble bouncing back from any of his outings. Quote, I have a growing understanding of where my body is and what I can do and what I can't do at this point, unquote. Well, certainly Senga is going to be an integral part of the Mets rotation. The Mets have had a bit of an injury bug bite them as Francisco Alvarez, their starting catcher, is going to be out for a bit, as well as Jeff McNeil, so two regulars from their lineup that they will be missing offensively. And certainly last year, Senga, who is coming off of a surgery and then came back and then had himself a bit of a problem where we watched him pitch late in the year and he looked good and then he popped a hamstring and he had some lower body issues that obviously can translate into the issues with the arm. So we'll see how he fares and how he does moving forward here. But I think that if the Mets are going to go somewhere, he has to be a big part of it, as that is Kodai Senga. We're going to move over to the National League West, and we'll start off with some bad news. One of the other players that will not be on an opening day roster because Yu Darvish is going to be on the injured list. That is bad news for Padre fans, as he has been listed with inflammation in his throwing elbow. Since signing his six-year deal prior to the 2023 campaign, Darvish has averaged 20 starts per season. Though the Padre brass may not say it publicly, they are expecting more or less around that amount of starts for Darvish. And certainly if he can give them what they want, and that is postseason starts and ramp up for that later part of the year, that is where he will be in need. His 2023 season was cut short because of a bone spur in his right elbow, and his 2024 campaign with back, neck, and elbow trouble, as well as he missed a couple of months while on the restricted list tending to a personal matter. If missing a few early season starts is the price the Padres have to pay, to get a dominant Darvish for September and October, I think the Padres would be willing to pay that. So keep an eye on the Padres and how that rotation will play out here early in the season. Next up is his teammate, and this is Yuki Matsui. Yuki Matsui has appeared in the most games, or at least tied for appearing in the most games with the Padres this spring with 10 under his belt. Teammate Jason Adam appeared in as many games, but didn't quite have the same success that Matsui exhibited. Despite only appearing in just 5 games in September last year and went nearly 3 weeks without pitching at one point in that final month, Matsui has made the squad this year. Yet, quote from general manager AJ Preller, "That wasn't much of a decision for us. You look at the second half and you'll look at his walk to strikeout ratio. He's cut his walks down. He punches guys out and he's been a big part of our team and we've let him know that," unquote. It seemed like he was drowned in the NPB forever, but the 28-year-old Matsui finished his first year in the majors with a 3.73 ERA over 62 2/3 innings. His whip dropped from 1.31 before the All-Star break to 0.90 in the second half, and his strikeout-to-walk ratio jumped from 1.74 to 7.25 over that same stretch. And those are eye-popping numbers. One of the things that we noted when Matsui was pitching for the Tohoku Rakuten Golden Eagles in the Japanese League is he always seemed to be a bit of a roller coaster or struggle. He would close the deal, but it was often an arduous process to close games for the Golden Eagles. So him stepping in as a 7th, 8th inning relief option in San Diego, it has been a pretty decent transition for him facing big league players. Our next up is staying in the same National League West. We're going to look at the Los Angeles Dodgers, and we'll start with Shohei Ohtani. Ohtani has resumed his throwing and has ramped up for his debut later this spring, but the Dodgers' spring training has been a little disjointed as they've returned from Japan and still played a few exhibition games before beginning the North American portion of their 2025 season. In 23 spring at-bats, Ohtani had 7 hits and a homer, including 2 RBIs. In the 2-game miniseries against the Cubs, Ohtani was 3-for-8 with a homer and an RBI. The two-way player of the Dodgers didn't skip a beat after off-season shoulder surgery, and of course, the reigning MVP, there are lots of expectations that are placed on him and the Dodgers for this season forthcoming. So nothing really to talk about further, as they only had a couple of games under their belt once they did return, and Ohtani is ready to get things going. It's the Detroit Tigers who will be in Los Angeles to open up the season tomorrow. We'll be keeping our eye on that one as it's Tarik Skubal who is going to be going head-to-head against Blake Snell in the opener. Well, the second game of that series, it is going to be Yoshinobu Yamamoto, as he will get the nod in the second start of the North American portion of the season. Yamamoto hasn't appeared in an exhibition game since March 10th, but he did get the nod in Tokyo in the series opener, working 5 innings, allowing 3 hits, walking 1, and striking out 4. The Dodgers were said at one point to be considering a 6-man rotation once Ohtani returns, and that could include Yamamoto, Sasaki, Ohtani, Blake Snell, Glasnow, and Dustin May. Dodgers manager Dave Roberts was quoted as saying, quote, "Honestly, I'm expecting a lot of good things from Yoshinobu this year. He got his feet wet last year, and he did a fantastic job for us, but he's ahead of where he was last year, and that's exciting. There's a lot less unknown. I think where he's at physically and with his mechanics, he's just ahead of where he was at last year," unquote. Roberts took it even further after Yamamoto's start in Japan and went on to say, quote, "I think that last year to this year, the confidence, the conviction that he has in the throwing the fastball in the strike zone is much, much more convicted." He said, "If you saw that tonight, and you saw, and so if he can do that, obviously with his health, he sees no reason why he can't see a Cy Young in the conversation for Yamamoto this season," unquote. So what will stand in Yamamoto's way will be his health, and if he can go out and absolutely deal as it's expected. It makes you wonder how many starts you need to get a Cy Young conversation these days. I was thinking about that more recently, and Cy Young award winners Can you get 24 starts to be awarded a Cy Young? Or do you have to go out there and pretty much be 28 to 32 starts and be productive over that length of time? So when you have pitchers like Zach Wheeler and even his teammates in Roky Suzuki, maybe a Tyler Glasnow, and certainly Corbin Burnes now moving into the National League or back to the National League with the Arizona Diamondbacks, all of those have to be in the conversation. Maybe even Zach Gallen with a bounce back year. And Shota Imanaga is going to be in that mix as well, one would have to think. So we'll see if he can stay healthy and if he can produce. As we said, how many starts do you think you're going to have to need to be able to get into that Cy Young conversation? Well, our last Dodger is the Game 3 starter of the Dodgers, as Roky Suzuki will take to the mound against the Tigers in that third game of the opening series. He's kind of been handled with kid gloves so far this spring. Suzuki got the second start in the Tokyo series. He pitched three innings. He allowed one run on one hit, but he did walk five and struck out three. So I'm very interested to see how the Dodgers plan to manage Suzuki this year. He's coming from an environment where pitchers do throw a lot. In Japan, they do use a six-man rotation, but they generally are left in the game longer and throw more on their days off than their North American counterparts. So further, one of the things I felt coming to North America is to see how Suzuki is going to have to develop a changeup. And if he's going to have sustained success, certainly facing the Latin players that they really don't like getting changeups. They can deal with curveballs. They can deal with sliders. They can deal with the fastball. It's that changeup of some variety that they could throw that really keeps them off balance. And I'm also a fan of his fastball. I'm a big fan of his fastball. It's elite. When you're throwing 100 miles an hour and with movement, you got to like Suzuki's fastball. Some people say his forkball is elite too, but I personally feel from what I've seen, it's just slightly below the caliber of his fastball. This is not to take anything away from it, but I just think his fastball is right now on the curve a little bit better than his forkball. And if his forkball is not working on a given day, puts him at a disadvantage. And I'm not really a big fan of his breaking ball, which I feel can be improved. So those three pitches in particular. So if he can improve his breaking ball, and he can add a changeup, a legitimate changeup into the mix, I think that will prove that he is going to be a very sustainable pitcher for a long time in Major League Baseball. And once he gets through the MLB for the first time, I also think it's going to be very important to see how the league is going to adapt and make changes to face Roky. Well, that is our next segment. We're going to come back and do another one around here for you. So hang tight, everybody. We'll be back in just a couple moments as we just finished off with the Dodgers. We'll be back for more after this.
The Japan Baseball Report has been brought to you by Last Graphs Baseball. If you would like to reach us with questions or comments, our email address is info@lastgraphsbaseball.com. We'll respond to as many comments and questions in the upcoming episodes that we can. We appreciate your listenership and look forward to seeing you one of our live stream listening parties this season.
Our next up is Shota Imanaga of the Cubs, and much like the Dodgers pitchers, Imanaga didn't see any action in the spring after returning from the Tokyo series. The Tokyo series, Imanaga worked four innings in Japan, and he did not allow a hit. He did walk four and strike out two. Imanaga will get the start in the Cubs' third game of the regular season as they were set to take on the Arizona Diamondbacks to open up the 2025 campaign. And so we'll see how it shapes up for him. I would expect that Imanaga his workload is going to be very, very similar to what we've witnessed in the last season. And I think that there's probably outside talk again that he'll be in the conversation for a Cy Young Award. I just don't know if he's got that next gear to get it up where some of the others are, but I certainly think he will be in the early conversation. So we'll have to see how that plays out. The other thing with regards to Imanaga is that starting staff in Chicago, as they do have had a mix of veterans and some free agents that they have brought in with Jameson Taillon and as well as Justin Steele. It looks like Ben Brown has made the rotation as well. So we'll keep an eye on that and how they use Imanaga this year. if he is going to be more of a six-inning guy, if they'll stretch him out a little bit further. I'm sure that the Japanese players or the pitchers would love to be able to be stretched out a little bit more than they are here in North America that we normally see. Well, that is Imanaga. We're going to look at his teammate now on the offensive side, and that would be Seiya Suzuki. Suzuki started the spring very slowly. The Cubs then went to Japan, and Suzuki was ice cold in that two-game miniseries. He went 0-for-8 at the plate, striking out four times. To his credit, he did play in three exhibition games upon returning and went 3-for-5 with a double and a couple of home runs. So that might be the tonic that Suzuki needs to get his season on track. We mentioned in one of our previous podcasts that Suzuki had not been particularly happy about being anointed a DH only or potentially DH only. He is going to get the lion's share of that for the Cubs with Ian Happ in left, Pete Crow Armstrong in center, and Kyle Tucker in right field. Suzuki is the odd man out. I have to say defensively for the Cubs with Tucker in right, Tucker is definitely an upgrade to Suzuki. But I was really impressed with Pete Crow Armstrong in center field. I don't know if Armstrong's going to hit much more than 230, but boy, oh boy, can he get after a ball. Wrigley Field, the friendly confines. I'm not really sure if Crow Armstrong's defensive abilities will be on display like they would be when he gets to parks like Comerica and Petco Stadium in San Diego, some of the larger ballparks, where he can get into the gap and go and get balls. But his speed was really, really fun to watch. And then you got a Gold Glove caliber left fielder in Ian Happ. So those three outfielders for the Cubs push Suzuki to the side. And Suzuki's not bad in the outfield, but just those other three are so strong defensively that unfortunately he becomes the odd man out, and he'll get some occasional time in the outfield when he comes in to spell some of the others. But just like in this game, you have to have some patience, because if somebody gets an injury or a couple injuries, your role will expand and you'll have to be able to make the most of it when you get that opportunity. Well, our last one for discussion is another player who is going to start the year not on the big league team. That is going to be Masataka Yoshida. Yoshida is going to begin the season in the minor leagues as he's rehabbing from his off-season shoulder surgery for a torn labrum in his right shoulder. And I'm not so sure if it's because of that. I think he could be ready to play if they had to. But details have emerged on the demotion of Yoshida, who had signed that five-year, $90 million contract with Boston in 2022, as he would begin the season in AAA Worcester to continue his throwing program to build up his arm strength. Now, contract clauses, rehab rules, and quiet trade whispers may involve a bigger move for the Red Sox that could include Yoshida. And according to MLB.com's Ian Brown, who reported late Saturday that there was, quote, "there is no roster exemption for players to be extended on rehab assignments due to arm surgery." And adding to that, Yoshida can be placed on a 20-day rehab assignment once he is ready, unquote. So as per Major League rules, rehab assignments are limited to 20 days for positional players. Transaction rules don't allow extra rehab time for position players just because it's been a player's arm that has had surgery. And so, for example, on the other side, pitchers can sometimes get up to 30 days, but with position players, it's a hard cap of 20 days, regardless of the nature of their injury. So often Major League players have certain types of contracts, and especially those who are veterans or international signings. They can negotiate different type of clauses that prevent teams from demoting them to the minors without their approval. And so this is where it's going to get interesting. So in Yoshida's case, the Red Sox can't officially option him to the minors until his 20-day rehab assignment is completed and that he agrees to it. So this, in a way, is going to buy the Red Sox some time. They get some time because they're going to evaluate their outfield mix of Jaron Duran, Sedena Rafael, and Willier Abreu, which is considered to be the starting lineup. And right now, Rob Refsnyder is the fourth outfielder. So buys them time. And then the question is Yoshida still going to be a fit for the roster? So on the other side, Yoshida could request a trade or even his outright release. If it's an outright release, then any team that claims him on waivers would be responsible for the $55.8 million remaining salary over the next 3 years of his contract. So I'm not so sure if teams would go out there and maybe look at getting Yoshida. It sounds strange because he did hit 280 last season. He does have some pop in the stick, and he did hit in double-digit home runs. And I do think he could be productive for a team, but maybe not at that particular rate. So Red Sox did try to trade Yoshida in the offseason along with Tristan Cassis in a different types of trade scenarios, specifically with the Seattle Mariners in mind. And they, of course, were rebuffed and turned down. And those rumors included going the other way, Luis Castillo, the pitcher of the Mariners, who was considered to be the centerpiece, going the other way to Boston. So we're going to have to wait and see how that plays out. Probably by about the third week of April, we'll have a little clearer picture on where Yoshida stands. But for now, it is Worcester in AAA, rehab assignment. He'll be there for about 3 weeks or almost 3 weeks. And then we'll see what the Red Sox choose to do. And a lot of that's going to come down, I think, to how certainly that they are playing, or at least their current roster would be playing out. Hang tight, everybody. We'll be back to wrap this up in just a moment on the Japan Baseball Report, brought to you by Last Raps Baseball. You are listening to the Japan Baseball Report, brought to you by Last Raps Baseball. Join our Facebook group called NPB Japan Baseball Report. Connect with other fans of the Japanese game. If you aren't on Facebook, be sure to bookmark our YouTube channel for live events in the 2025 season. The Major League Baseball season starting on Thursday and the NPB getting going on Friday. We're going to be doing our live commentary on our YouTube channel. So if you are around on YouTube, be sure to bookmark the channel. Come and see us. If you are listening to our podcast, we'll continue to give you updates and reports over the next little bit. And we are excited to get this NPB season going and underway. Once again, everybody, we appreciate you for taking the time to listen to the Japan Baseball Report. We will catch you again as we'll drop another one of these in the next couple of days, another one of our podcasts. Thanks again, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.